Hello, everyone, and welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation, a podcast from AIM10X dedicated to uncovering the stories behind the world's leading change agents and most valuable learnings from our community of global innovators. I'm your host, Caleb Masters, and as always, we're here to provide you with the actionable insights from today's greatest thought leaders to guide and accelerate your journeys. For those of you tuning in for the first time, AIM10X is a knowledge and networking hub for leaders passionate about digitally transforming enterprises for better decision-making and a better planet. You can learn more by heading to aim10x.o9solutions.com. At the end of 2022, we examined the biggest supply chain pain points we expected to see across the globe and how organizations might address them, from diversifying supply sources to ease the pain from global shortages to leveraging planning technology to make networks more resilient. And we did this with special guests Maria Villablanca and Tengi Kelly. And since then, the demand for enterprise planning technology has not slowed down. A recent Gartner survey reported that 87% of senior business leaders say that making digital investments remains a priority this year. Now that 2023 is halfway over, I thought it would be the perfect time to step back and do a pulse check on the main digital transformation challenges supply chain leaders are facing today. In this episode, we invited Matt Gabriel, the Jim Pact Vice President of Supply Chain Global Consulting, to join us to talk about the key learnings the Jim Pact teams have learned from digital transformations in 2023 so far. We'll start by covering Matt's journey with Jim Pact before exploring why data is the most critical topic that no one wants to talk about in 2023. We'll also cover what the end result of successful digital transformations should be, and then we'll close out the conversation by talking about how to think differently about change management in order to achieve those successful business outcomes related to digital transformation. So without further ado, let's meet today's very special guest, Matt Gabriel. Matt is a vice president in Jim Pact's supply chain service line overseeing their global consulting delivery. He has led or supported clients through multiple digitally enabled supply chain transformations. Matt, welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation.
Thanks, Caleb.
Well, hey, Matt, we are going to talk all about some of the pain points that you've been seeing among supply chain leaders via your time at Jim Pact, specifically as it relates to digital transformation. But before we get to that, I really want to learn a little bit more about you. What exactly attracted you to the world of supply chain?
I think anybody in supply chain is probably half crazy, maybe. We all actively picked a profession where you are never right. It's just how little wrong are you is our goals. But I think for a lot of us, it's really about you like problem solving. There's inherent burning nature within you to solve a problem. The supply chain has a lot of problems it needs solving. And those really also kind of translate into liking to help and solve problems for people. People who are your ultimate customers of these products that we're moving around the world. So there's just an inherent nature to help and solve things.
Right. And I can imagine in a world where, as you put it, you're never right, or it's about problem solving, you're constantly having to address challenges no one's seen before or not seen before in that context. What would you say has been one of your biggest career challenges?
Yeah, I would say for me personally, it's been finding balance. I think a lot of people, it's particularly really at any stage of your career, but often as you go further up in your career, how do you balance what you really want to do for your clients? You see all these great things you can offer to your clients, create new capabilities for them. At the same time, you want to support your team and be able to give them what they need to be successful. And then, of course, you have family and personal items as well. And all of these are conflicting against your time and energy levels. And it's really, how do you hit that balance? How do you strike that? We're all constantly trying to figure that one out. But for me, I think that's the biggest challenge that continues to pop up. And it's probably a common theme for everybody.
I imagine when you're in that space trying to find balance, there's also probably a handful of times when you feel like, we got it, or we really took things to the next level. So I'd love to hear a little bit on the positive side. Again, you're constantly trying to tackle unprecedented challenges and problem solve. What would you say is one of the proudest achievements from your career so far?
Yeah, I would say what we've built within Jim Pact from a team perspective, and then that translating into what we're able to offer our clients is honestly one of the proudest achievements that I have. We really have a culture that is extremely unique. We have a highly curated team, and those people are always geared towards how are we going to be able to serve clients. And so it takes a very long time to build that, and it's incredibly hard to maintain it once you have started it. And that's something that we we really pride ourselves on. There was a question asked in one of our end of the year meetings about, sort of what keeps you up at night? And the answer that I gave was, have I done enough to support my team? And that really does truly keep me up at night of how have I been able to help them? Because by helping them, they're able to help our clients. So it's just making sure that we can support this team well and keeping that team happy, because we really have invested a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in getting the right people.
And maybe you could elaborate here. I mean, you guys are building really exceptional teams to take on, again, some of the most unprecedented challenges within the supply chain. Could you elaborate for us? I mean, what exactly are some of these unexpected challenges that you've encountered while working on such large scale projects at Genpact?
Yeah, there's one that I didn't expect to see at first, but continues to come up frequently. It's just sort of expectation management. When we go down these transformations, often you'll see that we're starting from a point where someone internally has set an expectation that is misaligned with the level of effort that might be required, or the timeline, or the budget, et cetera. And that, I think, often comes from people have all good intentions about what they believe an effort might take, and they may have had an experience once in their career, et cetera, about how that went. But ultimately, speaking to someone like us or others ahead of time, when you're first having these concepts come out, thoughts that you're dealing with and issues that you want to address, really helps manage those expectations more appropriately. Because when we start misaligned on the expectations, we're on our back foot. We need to figure out a way forward from there. And so there's a whole lot of supply chain problems that we're going to try and solve. Those are the things that we'll get through. We have the right people to address those problems, but just make sure that everyone's aligned on what does it take. Just getting that started appropriately makes the solving of the hard stuff much, much easier. When we're misaligned at the beginning, you're just, oh, here we go again. You know, we got to back it up, get everybody on the same page, and then work through any kind of concerns there. I'd say another thing that's consistently come up is a misconception that, say a small company has small problems. So all the companies we work with, regardless of their size, have really complex problems that they're solving. It might be more about a scope or scale issue, but if you're a small client, there's a chance you've got a really complex problem. Conversely, too, when you look at our larger clients, you might come in thinking, well, with the funds that they have and the capabilities that they have as a larger organization, more people, et cetera, more things are ironed out. But the practical reality we often run into is that, unfortunately for those clients, they've had to deal with scope and scale issues in a way that's been complex and really hard to get a handle on. There hasn't been budget to address acquisitions, and that's how they've grown over the years to be able to consolidate things down. So, yeah, there's really different issues, whether you're small or large. But the fact is that everyone has complexity, and you can't walk in assuming that anything's going to be, a slam dunk.
Right. And I'm, of course, really getting to know your clients. I mean, you just broke down size there. I mean, every supply chain is going to have some sort of unique challenge, I can imagine. And taking the time to get to know those clients, their pain points, their goals, aligning with their leaders, I'm sure is really essential. And given the current challenges facing the supply chain, so things like the geopolitical conflicts we were seeing, the trade wars, there's macroeconomic uncertainty in many cases, and there's still this extreme demand and supply volatility. So with all of these things in mind, there really is no shortage of opportunity for professionals like you to make an impact by helping business leaders overcome these challenges. I'd like to learn a little bit more about Genpact and what you all are doing in order to make sure you are in the know and prepared. So what exactly is Genpact doing to keep your fingers on the pulse of the state of supply chain in 2023?
We spend a lot of time talking to clients. That's where I spend a lot of my day, talking with clients. I try to do as much of that as anything to really understand what they're seeing, what they're feeling. And that's across industries, again, big or small clients. So really understand what they are experiencing day in and day out. We also, like most folks, we are engaged in professional societies. We go to our conferences like AIM10X and sit in and enjoy and Gartner. All of that we will use as a source of information. Professional societies, again, is another, area that we're pulling in data. But between that, creating our own content and literature, publishing things in the forefront, we survey our clients. Really, the vast majority of just the nitty-gritty of talking to clients, understanding what's their pain point, what's really bothering them, what do they see in the future for their organization. That's where we can help bring together with clients across industries our view of what's out there and what's really working. And then as you gather the experience from all the projects that we've done, you know, we're able to synthesize that down into key learnings that we can take back into these projects for these clients and say, well, this may be a unique problem for you, but actually we've solved this problem three times over and in two different industries that you may not realize look very similar to yours. You know, life sciences and semiconductor. If you spend your career in life sciences, you're not going to think that semiconductor has very similar problems as you do. It turns out they do. And the way that we solve it in semiconductor, there's a lot of ways that we can parlay that into solving it for life sciences. It's just a matter of seeing those connection points and then bringing together, and that comes through experience. And
with that in mind, maybe you could outline for me here. I mean, what have you seen so far as the most pressing concerns of supply chain leaders in 2023?
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier, Caleb. Everyone's still struggling to figure out what new normal is. And I think the new normal, the problem we're still struggling is because it hasn't stopped coming yet. It just keeps coming, whether you're coming out of a terrible pandemic situation, your demand volatility, supply issues are still there. Then we have big geopolitical items popping up. And then, okay, now maybe we're coming into a recession that we're going to figure out whether, you know, what the impact of that looks like. And because everything is so interconnected and continues to just get more and more interconnected every day, the ripple effects of any one of these items, whereas in the past, they always came and they were always there, but now they come, I would say, maybe a bit more frequently, but the impacts of them coming is more easily felt throughout the globe and felt throughout our large organizations that we work with. So how do you get through that? How do you manage that on a day-to-day basis? As well, the talent situation is still there. It's still a struggle, even as we maybe are walking our way into a recession. There's still pressures on talent, both in industry and consulting, to find the right people. And ultimately, in consulting, you are a knowledge-based business, and you are very much about the knowledge that sits in your team's head. You got to work hard to find the right people, and you got to work hard to keep the right people.
Some of these things we've heard of, the war for talent sort of thing, is still very much at play, even with a potential recession looming. Do you have any examples from clients that maybe you could share?
I was talking with a client just the other day about their demand volatility picture. You know, how do we work with their forecast? You know, you take a statistical forecast, obviously your last 2 years or so of data are kind of out the window, right? No one's really able to use that because of the uncertainties that were evident in that data. It was high, it was low, it was just all over the place. So how are we looking at different AI ML capabilities to really figure out more from a demand sensing perspective what the future might look like, whereas historically we were using just time series forecasting? So that evolution is there for a lot of clients who have been, you know, as we come out of the pandemic, that's pretty much the norm for everybody. Others are, yeah, hey, I've got this massive inventory position. I'm still working through what do I do here? Because those demand volatility pictures or the uncertainty in their supply chain, they've had to buffer in certain ways that they didn't have to in the past. And now as demand is still figuring itself out, yes, they're trying to figure out how to best guess that demand. Yeah, they're getting more and more exposure on inventory in ways that they didn't think or in places that they don't want it to be. So we're still working through this settling out of all the noise that's come in from the past few years. Those are some of the bigger, I'd say, more recent discussions I've been having. But it's a constant theme of stuff that exists throughout supply chain throughout the years. It's just now amplified in certain new ways.
Right. Every time you think you solve for it, some of the same problems come back to the surface in a new light or a new context. We're here to talk about digital transformation, of course, and I want to hear a little bit more about your perspective at Gympact. How can digital transformation of these oftentimes outdated processes or systems help businesses overcome several of these pain points that we've already outlined today?
Yeah, it comes back to the visibility, the agility, the adaptability. The digital transformations that clients go through is really about enabling those things to happen. So you're being able to respond better to what's coming out and coming at you from the market. And the constant evolution of our digital footprints and what the offerings are there is a balancing act that all clients go through. Being able to manage how much digital transformation to do, where are the right ones to put the money into, what's the value that's going to be created. But ultimately, you're creating the agility to respond, and then you're also being able to leverage your scarce resources more effectively. Everybody wants to be managing by exception. Nobody wants to be managing through the minutiae of all the details. These platforms that we were putting in place, and O9 in particular, is able to help you manage by exception. It's giving you that agility to respond to the issues that are coming up on a daily basis.
based on what you've seen with clients, I imagine there's a lot of different frameworks that should be built before you jump into a digital transformation. A lot of companies are trying to figure out how to solve for this. Why is it important to have a clear vision? And you said this earlier, alignment from the start of digital transformation so that it's successful.
Well, with any of these transformations, you can approach them from maybe a small bites perspective and kind of eat your way through it, or you take bigger efforts just because you're a large company, even a small bite's a big bite. But ultimately, you really need to have everybody on the same page. And if they're not, you're going to waste time as you get into the transformation getting that alignment. And that sets a bad tone for the start of the project. You really need everyone to be on the same page, nodding heads as you're sitting there in the kickoff meetings talking about where we're going. We work with clients a lot. Our approach through our Enabling Transformation Alignment, our ETA offering that we give, that really touches on those core elements of people, process, technology, and data as we go into a project. Once you've really built that alignment, because you're going, for some of these projects, you're going across a massive organization, huge footprint. You got a lot of people to marshal. You got people with very different and conflicting priorities. And so now you're trying to bring them all together into a path forward, and you don't want to waste any time once you have those people together. So taking the effort up front to go through that and get that alignment built out is hugely beneficial to getting a successful kickoff of a project. And, you know, if you don't do that, you have things come in on the first day of the project. We say, okay, well, we're going to talk about, demand planning, and we're going to be moving that into 09. What about this system over here? Are we sunsetting that piece of data, or that comes out of that system, we bring that into 09 or not? And you have blank stares spread throughout the room. No one knows what to say. Getting some of those core elements understood up front is just critical to making the project start off in a smoother path and getting everybody on board.
You mentioned one of the goals and benefits of a digital transformation is visibility into what's going on throughout the supply chain in any number of areas. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your perspective on the connection between visibility and data. I know big data has been a hot topic for a few years now, but tell me, what role does data play in helping businesses begin to solve the impacts through digital transformation?
Yeah, data is one of the most crucial topics that nobody wants to talk about. I mean, it really is the foundation for every system in the end. The data is the lifeblood. It's flowing through the system day in and day out, every second of the day. It's there helping you make good decisions. Good decisions made on bad data are just bad decisions waiting to come to light later. And ultimately, you need a solid data strategy. You need solid data to be fed into these systems. And unfortunately, data takes a while to work out. And every client we come into, they struggle with the realities of, hey, do we have good data or not? I'm not quite sure. I've heard bad things over here, but good things over there. Or they've grown, as I mentioned earlier, you grow through acquisition. You got a hodgepodge of ERPs spread throughout your footprint. How do you do that? How do you deal with all that? Your realities that come into play within supply chain projects, particularly around data, these systems need a lot of data to be effective in how they can bring light and bring visibility and agility to an organization. But it's a bit of the tail wagging the dog as it relates to data, because you might have a broader data strategy for a broader organization, and the supply chain needs are only a piece of that, but they are going to probably force a transition to start to happen in how you manage data more globally. So the balancing act becomes looking at the data strategy as an overall enterprise strategy and then fulfilling the needs that are required. The nice thing about 09, the enterprise knowledge graph, you can grow with the data that you need. So you're not beholden to try and grab every single bit of data that might ever be needed in the system right out of the get-go. You can definitely expand and enhance on that as you're building out the functionality that's required. But in the end, data will take a long time. It will take more than anybody ever wants it to take. But you have to have a strategy in place to deal with it. At Genpact, we have a lot of tools and capabilities and methodologies to really bring the right data to bear. PowerMe is one of our capabilities that we've brought it to clients, where it's really about assessing the lineage of your data, the quality, the health, the overall footprint, how it's all moving together throughout your systems. And really getting a feel for that ahead of time as we go through our ETA approach is really where we'd like to go, because if you're missing data, now's the time to know. You want to learn that early up front so you have time to fix the issues. But you cannot overemphasize the importance of data.
data is just one piece of the puzzle. You need the strategy. Leaders need to have a way and a methodology to digest and analyze that data to convert it to what we call quality knowledge before they can even start to make the key decisions. Why is centralized decision-making based on that data and knowledge important to overall success?
That's a great question. I'll maybe take it from a couple angles too. The centralized decision-making is really a balancing act between central and local values. So there tends to be a lot of benefit to centralizing aspects of what you do day in and day out. And maybe you have a statistical center for forecast excellence, and you've got folks who are, you know, PhDs in staff forecasting, and they can really bring to bear a lot of great capabilities for your organization. And we do this actually as a managed service for clients, where we do staff forecasting COEs as a service. And that's a, you know, capability set that's hard to find. But then as you go, maybe build your overall consensus demand plan, where you're taking that staff forecast and you're taking other streams of intelligence, and then you're going forward with, you know, your ultimate demand picture for your cycle or for your SOP, your SOE cycles. You want to go more local market. So people who are in the market know a little bit more about the ins and outs of what's going on within that space or those products or that brand, et cetera. And you really want to kind of bring that to a local control. But it's really about having a great framework that goes between the central and the local. So then another corollary to that, though, is we often do in our large implementations, we have a discussion with clients about you know, sort of a global template. You have a very big organization, you have many, many thousands of people spread across the globe, and you want to have a designed operating model, a target operating model, as we often refer to it, that you can you know, ideally take around, and you've got about 80% commonality is the most common thing I get asked. You're going to do 80-20 in our common versus local kind of split. Any of my clients will have heard this from me at some point in time. You know, commonality for the sake of commonality will never survive. If you say, you know, it has to be common just because we want it to be common, what you're really saying is that we do some things wrong today. And this push, this transformation that we're under, this centralization or this commonality that we're driving for is the best way to fix that and to fix it at scale in the ways that we need to fix it at scale. That's what you're trying to do ultimately. The commonality, because you can, you know, move people between brands or between regions, that's beneficial, but often it doesn't happen all that much. But what we're really solving for is that we've got problems in how we operate. We know what the better way to behave is, and this common drive that we're under is instilling that throughout the organization, those better ways. And then, as we said, you still have to allow for the localization that's important and required. But ultimately, you're really focused on what's the value-driven solution I'm trying to go for here that's going to have the most value for the business. And it's going to be driving commonality, but it's fixing problems by driving that commonality.
Again, you don't want to oversimplify through centralization. You want to really make note of the nuances and, again, that connection between sort of centralization and localization. So I think those are really key to outline for any digital transformation strategy. You've already talked about the alignment piece, the importance of getting everyone all the way up to the leader. But at the end of the day, I imagine getting other key employees on board with any sort of new technology adoption or digital transformation initiative is going to be really important. From your perspective, why is it important for leaders to view any sort of adoption of new technology as a larger company-wide change management initiative?
Yeah, the footprint of most of the transformations that we do spans the entire organization from a business perspective. It may not span all the functions in the organization, but it spans the footprint of the organization as you go to market. As a result, you're touching a whole lot of, you know, people and process as an organizational design as part of that. And we all know change is very personal. Everyone interprets the change in a different way and looks at it from their lens. And you can't just ignore that reality. You know, ultimately, the system stuff will be hard. And there, or in other cases, it might be perfectly easy, but you tell the system what to do, right? We're spending a lot of time and capabilities, and we're configuring and building out O9 to do the things that we want to do, and the system's not complaining back to us. It just goes along for the ride and does what we were setting up to do. But the people don't have to. You know, they can do whatever they want. They can respond in the way that they're going to respond. And you have to be accepting of that reality. It's not something to ignore. It's something to embrace. You know, those are the people that make you successful day in and day out. And where they are today isn't maybe where you need them to be in the future, but those are the people you want to come along for the ride with you. And so you just have to acknowledge that the footprint of what you're trying to do is vast. And so let's go after it with the mindset of a big change effort and going along that path so that we can be successful with this overall transformation that we're going down.
And I want to go a little deeper here. I mean, from your perspective, how have the most successful digital transformation leaders that you've worked with at Genpact approached these types of change management initiatives?
It kind of goes back to what I was saying, where people embrace it for what it is. There's a tendency, I go through a lot of sales cycles with clients and a lot of discussions about different aspects. But what I often see is when people are pressed for budget, and this kind of goes back to setting the right expectations on the front end. But when people are pressed for budget, one of the first things they look to cut is change management. And I often joke with them, I think change management as a capability really needs a bit of a rebranding, because you're really talking about like success insurance. Yeah, if we all called it success insurance, I think we'd look at it and say, well, how much insurance do you want to buy on the success of this project? You say, well, I'd like to buy a lot of insurance that this is going to be a successful project. I certainly don't want to go down this path and it fail. And change management is that. It's success insurance. And so the leaders that I've worked with who have embraced that reality and understood that and really said, okay, I'm going to overspend in this particular area, have had the best ROI. Everything I see throughout projects, dollar for dollar, the biggest ROI you're going to get is on change management. Like I said, we'll get the tool working. We will make that capable. There may be some functional areas that we have to expand on. There may be some that are easier than others to ultimately get to where we need to be, but we'll get there. We have high confidence that we'll get there. O9 is a great platform to get there with. But as I said, the people, they go at the pace they want to come. And so you need to overinvest in getting the people on board, accepting the change that they're going through, helping them accept that change that they're going through, and walking down that path. So the overinvestment in that space is hugely beneficial. And I would even argue that at the expense of, if you are on a tight budget, at the expense of some functionality, get the people on board, bring that functionality later. You'll be much more successful overall. The wins that you'll have, the echo chamber that gets created in an organization, as people are saying, oh, did you see this? We just got O9 live. This is fantastic. We're loving what we're able to do here. This is capability we did not have before. Yeah, that builds the momentum that unlocks more budget for more functionality later. And I honestly personally went down this journey myself. Yeah, when I first started out with my career, it was not something that I put as much attention to. And then as I kept going through transformations and seeing where we really hit it on the head, the nail on the head, it really got value out and ensured the success really was realized, it kept coming back time and time again to change management.
Right. It's one thing to find a viable solution. It's another to change the way people think about the way they work and the way they work with the tools they have. So I think, like you said, sort of investing in those programs is going to be a really essential part to the overall success. The good news is businesses, business leaders, supply chain leaders don't have to do this on their own. There are a number of technology partners or experienced partners or folks like Genpact out there that can help with that. I'd love to just get your perspective here, Matt. I mean, why is it important for businesses to have an experienced partner to help them navigate these often unprecedented change management initiatives and technology adoption processes?
Yeah, there's, I'd say, multiple reasons. And obviously, I'm a bit biased coming from the consulting side of the house. But one of the pure realities is that, as I mentioned earlier, we've got a team that we've heavily curated focused specifically on this. So our clients are professionals in supply chain. They're professionals in their particular industry. We're professionals in doing digital transformation. And we're professionals in enabling supply chain solutions to come to our clients. So within Genpact, one of the things that we do first and foremost is come at it from the we're solving your business problem perspective. The digital transformation is a tool to enable the solutions that we need to go after. It's part of the bigger picture of solutions that we're doing. So we always look to make sure that we are solving that first and foremost. But day in and day out, we are trying to do that for clients. We are spending our late nights figuring out what's the better way to solve this particular problem. How do we best get adoption? As I mentioned earlier, change management, We have our change lens, which is part of our approach to really doing a holistic review of capabilities for individuals, capabilities for the organization, the from to that they need to go down, the learning journeys that we need to establish. We have all the learning content that focuses not just on the technology, not the abilities of just, you know, how do you use O9, but then what's the from to on foundational concepts? Maybe somebody doesn't know MRP really well, and you need them to know MRP better because of the capability that we're deploying with O9. We've spent the time to build all this up. We spent the time to understand how to assess, do people need these? This kind of, you know, day in and day out focus, relentless focus on being able to have this transformation work and stick. What are the problems that come up with it? We do this every single day. Clients go through these journeys maybe once or twice in their career. And it's a, you know, privilege to be on that journey with them, but it is something that we are constantly doing day in and day out. And we ideally for you have found the issues ahead of time. You know, there's going to be stuff that always pops up, but we've been able to navigate these paths many, many times to help you down it without you having to learn it new for the first time. We're there to be the one leading you through that transition and say, okay, well, don't step here because we're going to fall off the cliff. If we step there, we're going to step over here and we're all going to make it down the hill, you know, just fine. So it's really about the knowledge that we've inherently gathered up, the experience that comes with doing this multiple times over. And that's what we're trying to bring to clients. I think that's what most clients see is the biggest value that we can provide. And coming at that from a mindset of, hey, we're industry practitioners. Half our team is coming out of industry that's been in your shoes. Another quarter of our team is digital transformation, consulting expertise. The other quarter is folks who are day in and day out building capabilities in software. They've really expanded their knowledge of what applications do and how to best use these platforms. So from a consulting side, we have that. We have people who have lived it in industry. We have people who have lived it in consulting. We have people who have lived it in software. And so bringing all that together, that's just in the organization that I run. My counterparts, we have a 10 times larger organization that is running supply chains day in and day out for clients, for some of the largest clients out there in CPG or high tech, semiconductor. We run their operations for them. So we're bringing all of this knowledge together when we sit down with you at a table and we iron out a plan and a path forward to make the transformation stick.
Well said. And again, listeners, there are a number of new challenges popping up every day, and you don't have to tackle these alone. There are a number of organizations like our friend Matt here at Genpact who can help you overcome these challenges. Well, Matt, hey, thanks so much for sharing your perspective on digital transformation, along with the things that you're seeing over on the Genpact side as it relates to digital transformation. Matt Gabriel, Genpact Vice President of Supply Chain Global Consulting. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into today's episode featuring Matt Gabriel, the Vice President of Supply Chain Global Consulting at Genpact. Now, if you enjoyed today's conversation and want to learn more from the world's leading change agents, you can join our community of global innovators by heading to aim10x.o9solutions.com and signing up today. Aim10x is a knowledge and networking hub for leaders passionate about digitally transforming enterprises for better decision-making and a better planet. You can also keep up with more episodes of Masters of Digital Transformation by leaving us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast app. And you can learn more about the activities and learning opportunities through the Aim10X Innovators Network by following Aim10X on LinkedIn. To close out today's show, I wanted to leave you with this thought from the best-selling author Mark Sanborn when he said, "Your success in life isn't based on your ability to simply change. It is based on your ability to change faster than your competition, customers, and business." We'll catch you in our next episode where we'll sit down with Tracy Allen, the Vice President of IT Procurement at Nokia, to learn about her career journey where she built the teams, leadership, and talent needed to achieve successful digital transformation at Nokia. You won't want to miss it.